WCRS 98.3 102.1. This is Solartopia Fight Back with Bob Fetrakis, Harvey Wasserman, and Connie Goodell Newton.
And this is Bob Fetrakis, and here on the line we have that senior editor of the freepress.org, that legend, the man who once deserted the Buckeye State for Ann Arbor. Who knows why? Harvey Wasserman.
Hello, great to be on the show. We got Columbus Day, Indigenous Peoples Day coming up.
I guess
there's going to be a big demo down to Santa Maria, is that right?
Yes, there will. 10 in the morning, we'll be doing the demo at the Santa Maria. Now, are you for or against Indigenous Peoples Day, Harvey?
Oh, I think Indigenous Peoples Day is a great idea. But, you know, once I talked to the Native American, the head of the the Indian Museum. They call it American Indian Museum of the American Indian on the Smithsonian. Hmm. And I asked them about, you know, why the Indians allow them to call it, say, Indian. And he said, we like being called Indians because it reminds us that Columbus was lost.
Yep.
So, we can celebrate that down to Santa Maria. It's always fun. Bob has to be careful to restrain himself, so he doesn't get deported.
Yeah, I hope I don't get deported, too.
I don't know. I've never been able to find any proof that my grandfather was actually legal. He apparently was a legal citizen of Canada, though. He fought in the British Army against the Turks in World War I in order to get British citizenship. And then he may have been a wetback. He came across the Detroit River. So we're worried about that. My other uncle, his brother, actually did get deported after swimming across the river. But the only people not immigrants, Native Americans, and we honor them on Indigenous Peoples Day. And, of course, Dave Robicks will be there. Dave Robicks, one of my favorite, actually at this point, my favorite singer-songwriter, I think in the long tradition of Phil Oakes. Where'd you come down on Phil Oakes there, Harvey?
I heard Phil Oakes sing, actually, at the Chicago Convention in 1968. There was a giant gathering in the same hall where Woodrow Wilson had been nominated for president in 1912 in Chicago. And Phil Oakes sang "I Ain't Marching Anymore." And when he did, everybody in the hall, must have been a few thousand people, stood up and people started burning their draft cards and their dollar bills. It was really amazing, actually. It was one of the great moments. It's the only time I ever saw Phil Oakes. I never met him. But it was really cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to start a campaign, since he was an Ohio State University Buckeye, that he get one of Archie Griffin's Heisman.
Oh, is Archie Griffin going to give away his Heisman?
Well, he should give one, of all people, to Phil Oakes, right? Because Phil Oakes did so much for the civil rights movement. You know, here's to the state of Mississippi.
I agree wholeheartedly. And well, maybe Phil Oakes, maybe OJ's Heisman should be dedicated to Phil
right,
Oakes.
Right, or we'll even take Reggie Bush's.
Yeah, that's really something. I don't, you know.
Connie's making faces at Guy's sports talk.
I'm like, what's going on?
But, you know, so as you know, the White House has announced that they're going to put the solar panels back up.
Oh, I saw that in the paper. And
nice.
More importantly,
I have my piece up on it, about it, at freepress.org.
The Dispatch actually...
The story is that in 1979, at the end of his time in office there, Jimmy Carter put a solar water heating array on the White House. It was a $30,000, cost $30,000. And it worked perfectly well. And then, Ronald Reagan came in. And in 1986, Ronald Reagan took him off. And people ask, why did Ronald Reagan take off the solar panels from the White House? They were working perfectly well.
Did they have a nuclear generator? A little nuclear generator at the White House?
That's basically what it boils down to. Can you say that on the air?
Oh, I said...
Yeah, I think son of a bitch is okay. Although,
historically... Seven deadly words?
No. But okay. in my understanding, though, we can't say that in Paducah.
After that, you know, we, in 1990, we had a demonstration against the war in the Gulf. There was a big demonstration, and Greenpeace was part of it, and we had one of the solar panels there that had been ripped, one of the actual panels, and we demanded that George H.W. Bush put it back in the White House, but he wouldn't. And then we asked Bill Clinton to put him back on the White House, and he wouldn't. And then George W. Bush actually did quite a bit of solar remodeling on the White House. He did, he put some solar heating in the pool and some other stuff. So he was actually better than Clinton, really, about solarizing the White House. And as I understand it, there are a lot of solar features on the ranch at Crawford. But he wouldn't put him back on. And then there was just a big demo in D.C., and Bill McKibben and those 350 people, they met with Obama's people, and they said, no, we're not going to put him back on. But then McKibben wrote an article about it, and I think that the Obama team figured that it was time, and so Stephen Chu, the Secretary of Energy, has announced that they will put not only a solar water heater back on the White House, but also photovoltaic cells to generate electricity, which Carter never did. So it's 24 years since they've been torn down. People have been working on it, and finally, after a quarter century, we'll put solar panels back on the White House. It's a good deal.
Well, you know, he doesn't want to appear to be to the left of T. Boone Pickens.
Well, I've seen T. Boone Pickens speak a couple times. And with all due respect, I mean, he's a funny guy and all that stuff, but I don't think he knows much. And I don't think he's a real big advocate of wind power, frankly. I mean, his thing is natural gas, and he likes to get a lot of attention for wind power. And I had a moment with him. He was speaking at, he spoke here in Columbus, and I actually asked him a question. There was a big gathering there, a lot of people in suits. And I had ridden my bike down there, so I gave him a whole spiel about bicycles. And then Mike Coleman was there, and I challenged him. I complained that there were no bike racks for parking your bike over at the convention center. And Mike Coleman promised to put up bike racks, but I don't know if he's done it. Somebody should call in and tell us if there are bike racks at the city center. I mean, not the city center. That's gone. There's nothing at the city center. Actually, the city center is one big bike rack, but at the convention center. But the idea that the solar panels are going to go back on is really nice. The tragedy of the Obama administration is Afghanistan. And here's, everybody's talking about the midterm elections and the problems with the economy. And it's all about the war in Afghanistan. I mean, the failure of the Obama administration is the failure, is been getting rolled by the military. And it's just really a tragedy. But that's what's killing the economy. That's what's killing the Democrats. That's why there's an enthusiasm gap, among Democrats, the same as Vietnam. Very hard for people to come out to work for Hubert Humphrey, when it looked like the war in Vietnam was going to continue to be prosecuted. And now it's hard for people to come out to work for Obama because there's nothing been changed in the military.
But to be fair to Hubert Humphrey, Obama's never been as far to the left on economic programs as Johnson or Humphrey. And
well,
I'm getting...
Obama had a clean shot. You know, he could have just told the military to forget it and not escalated the war.
Yeah, but what about all those crazy people who began to show up in the White House passing security? I remember reading the blogs on the internet going, Obama was sent a message that any crazy lunatic on earth can get past Secret Service.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I agree with you. And of course, the $100 billion a year we're spending there and the $3 trillion we spent in Iraq and all of it ongoing. But which reminds me, back to Dave Rovix, I saw one of his new songs is the Halliburton Boardroom Massacre, and here's some of the lyrics. I'll spare you the details. I did what I had to do. There's a boardroom blown to hell, and soon I will be too. You can say I lost it. You can say I'm insane. But may no one ever say that my death was in vain. A fantasy about what he'd like to do to Halliburton. Okay, Dave Rovix, who's coming, and Connie will tell you a little more about him, coming on Tuesday.
It's October 12th. He'll be performing at Carabar on Parsons Avenue. It's 115 Parsons. So it should be a good time. He's coming in celebration of the Native American Day, and it should be a great event. It's being co-sponsored by the Free Press. And go ahead.
All right, Dave Rovix again, a great singer-songwriter. And Harvey, I think he'd even write songs about the Framers and being deists. One of the songs he wrote was a classic about the people that deserted the U.S. Army, Irish soldiers fighting for the United States that formed the St. Patrick's Brigade and fought on the side of the Mexicans in the Mexican-American War.
Really? Never heard of those guys.
So, in the Free Press, it just came out, an article by Harvey. Hey, Tea Party and GOP, Ben Franklin's not your guy. So it looks like this article is about how the Tea Party, who claim to be something like a Constitution Party, actually would horribly disagree with the founders of our country, who were deists, and our greatest genius, Ben Franklin, was a proud and joyous sexual adventurer. So what else can you tell us about the early founders of our country and why the Tea Party people and GOP wouldn't like them, Harvey?
Well, certainly the religious conservatives would go crazy over Ben Franklin. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was, you know, a free-thinking, free-loving party animal.
He's freewheeling in France, right? He loves
and completely, you know,
French ladies.
Non-religious. And had no patience whatsoever for Christianity. None of these guys did.
What is deism?
Was famous. He took a Tom Jefferson was a big fan of Jesus, and he took a New Testament, but he didn't believe he was divine. And he took a New Testament, a copy of the New Testament, and spent the time and cut out all references to Jesus as being divine, but left the rest of it intact.
Jefferson's Bible.
Sounds like he was a rebellious teenager.
Well, you also have Ben Franklin writing that famous essay, A Cautious Deist, which says, that, you know, I'm indifferent. It doesn't really matter if Jesus, I have no opinion, whether Jesus was the Messiah or not.
Right. And Franklin, of course, in his autobiography, there's a classic Franklin-esque passage where he said a friend of his just wouldn't leave him alone, and finally got him to go to church, and he went five times, and he said that the preacher was such an idiot he would never go there again. So you know, that's classic Ben Franklin. I gotta say that if Ben Franklin was alive today, that like Glenn Beck and all these other guys would be screaming at him every day, and they would have hated Jefferson, you know, as a person. They would have hated Franklin as a person.
So
they might have liked Alexander Hamilton.
I'm wondering
but
if
then Hamilton, in his career, was forced to make a public statement about an affair he had. He was a father. Hamilton had eight kids, but had to come clean. So, and then they like to say that Washington was a big Christian because he walked around with a Bible. And Washington did walk around with a Bible, but you know, Washington was basically an alcoholic. I mean, as they all, by the way, they don't talk about it, but. They all were drunk all the time. Because when you went to the cities in early America, Philadelphia, New York, Boston, you couldn't drink the water. And if you did, you got sick as a dog. It's, you know, it just wasn't good water. It didn't have sanitation systems, any of that stuff. And so what they drank, when they drank to stay hydrated, they drank beer all day, every day. So these guys were mildly drunk 100% of the time that they were in writing the Constitution and all that stuff.
Huh. Oh yeah, they used to keep, and the Puritans too. The Puritans we're clear on the beer issue. Have you ever looked at the old, they used to keep records, at least a gallon a day.
A gallon? Well, that I don't know, but, you know.
No, I mean, literally, they kept records in the towns. And the average Puritan was drinking a gallon or more a day of beer.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I put beer on my cereal every morning.
Well, I only do it if it's light beer.
Right. Is it great taste or less filling?
Yeah.
So, you know, the point of the article is that the actual founders, the actual human beings, would have been completely mystified by these Tea Party people, and certainly the Tea Party people would have had wanted to have nothing to do with it. At least the you know, the organizers, I think the rank and file of the Tea Party is way more such as it is, although there have been a lot of studies that show that these guys are actually pretty rich. It's not really a working class movement, the Tea Party.
Well, it started by a couple of billionaire brothers.
And all that stuff.
You know, I mean, really it was AstroTurf created from the top by the third and fourth richest men in America.
And of course, Bob, you and I were at the big social gathering in Detroit, and there were 20,000 people there. But, you know, the Tea Party, and then we got no coverage, right? There was zero mainstream media coverage of that event. I mean, literally zero. And 20,000 people over a six-day period, very heavily organized, you know, extremely sophisticated and advanced materials. And yet the Tea Party has a gathering of 600 people, and it gets saturation news coverage, and they didn't talk about anything. Mm. You know, just Sarah Palin shows up and gives one of them, you know, another vacuous, airheaded speech. And then that's like big news, and these are the new movers and shakers in American politics. But the progressive movement is actually still, I think, a lot more numerous and credible than the Tea Party movement, that's for sure.
All right.
Well, Harvey, I wanted to ask you, I don't watch a lot of TV, actually, and I don't know what people are saying, but, I mean, do the Tea Party people, I know they claim to love the Constitution, but do they actually claim Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson as individuals?
Glenn Beck does. Glenn Beck has a poster of Ben Franklin. There was a big article in the Sunday Times magazine about Glenn Beck. And there was Glenn Beck loves to stand up against these historical raps.
Okay.
And he's completely ignorant of American history. Mm-hmm. Really knows nothing. But he's quite an entertainer. And by the way, I thought I highly recommend this Times Magazine article. It's very interesting. You know, Glenn Beck's main appeal is to women. You know, this crying stuff he does, and all his wacky theories and all this stuff. I mean, he's just really this like teddy bear. In the eyes of right wing women, apparently. And all this Mormon stuff, you know, and so...
Oh, yeah, he can have all the women he wants.
I watched the entire June 28th, or was it July 28th? August 28th, sorry. August 28th rally, you know, on Martin Luther King Day. Because I was at the original Martin Luther King Day. I heard the I Have a Dream speech in 1963. So I was interested to watch it. And, you know, he's just this big old teddy bear. And if you... They had these documentary films that they showed about Martin Luther King, and to watch these films that they showed, you'd think that Glenn Beck had been out there in Mississippi in the Freedom Summer, you know,
isn't that nice?
Just working away with Dr. King and you know, fighting the Klan and the whole deal. I mean, it was really weird. But being a Mormon, you know, the Mormons believe that Native Americans were the lost tribe of Israel.
Interesting.
And
we just killed them all.
He had all these Native Americans up there. There were more Native Americans at the Glenn Beck rally on the podium. And then there was zero in the audience, of course. But, you know, he had them up there. He had more Native Americans on the podium than I have ever seen at another, you know, any kind of rally, any political rally, left or right. Well, I mean, I've been a few that were specifically for Native Americans, but, you know, in terms of a non-dedicated Native American rally, there were more there than than like I, and, you know, and they were all, of course, treated with great honor.
Yeah, because they know where the golden plates are hidden.
Yeah, I guess, you know, or whatever it is, but...
Oh, yeah, you know the angel brought them the golden plates. Come on.
What are the golden plates? Is that from the Last Supper?
No, no, well, I don't know what they're from, but an angel brought them to the founder of the Mormon religion.
Oh, and hit them in a tree?
He might have. I don't know where they hit them, but Randy found these golden plates from an angel.
Uh-huh. Well, so yeah, Mormonism is interesting. In your article, you talk about how the founders were deists. Do you and Bob,
they believed that there was a creator, and there's a reference to the creator with a capital C.
Okay.
O-R, in the...
was it a man?
You know, and the deist belief is that the creator set the universe in motion, established natural law, in other words, the laws of nature, gave human beings free will, and then left.
Hmm.
And that, you know, it's basically it's incumbent on human beings to work things out.
The watchmaker universe, yes.
Now, deists also tend to be humanists. And believe that the way that government works and the way that human society works is essentially the Socratic method, which is, you know, you sit and you argue and everybody has an opinion, and then once everybody's opinion is expressed, that's how you get to the best way to make decisions. And that's very Greek, you know, and really... The founders of this country, you hear people say that the United States is a Judeo-Christian nation. No way. It is a Greco-Roman nation. I mean, the founding principles of the American Constitution are Greco-Roman. They come from Athens and Rome.
Yeah.
Not from the Old or New Testament. And then, of course, the other side of it is they come from the Native Americans, because the structure of the federal government comes directly from the Haudenosaunee, from the Iroquois, who had a confederation of tribes.
Right.
That Ben Franklin was a great admirer of.
And it was the matriarchal society.
The Iroquois Confederacy, and that was the model for the federal government.
Great. And the Haudenosaunee, it says, is also a matriarchal society. They accepted abortion and homosexuality and had an open dialogue. We are about to wrap up in the next couple minutes. I'd like to remind our listeners about the show at Karabar on Tuesday, where David Rovix is coming to play at 5 o'clock, just in time for happy hour specials. Karabar is located at 115 Parsons Avenue, and we hope to see you there. David Rovix is a great folk singer who has made a lot of really great comments on politics. It's October 12th, Tuesday, October 12th.
At 5 p.m., I'll be there, and so will David Rovix. All right, glad to have you on, Harvey. So once
again,
thanks
for having me. It's a good show, as always.
All right, peace, love, and understanding.
This has been Fight Back on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
Our grandparents were born here. Our ancestors lived with this earth. Land is the people, and the people are the land, and this is the land of our birth. But now you want to move us off this mesa, as if you can take a body from a soul. You want to take from us our paradise on earth and trade it for a mountain of coal. What if they were coming for your grandma? What if they were coming for your child? What if they were tearing up the ground beneath your feet, even taking the rivers that were once running wild? What would you do if they were coming for you?
This is Solartopia Fight Back on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
Hi, this is Bob Fitrakis here on Fight Back with Connie Goodell Newton, and we're privileged to have Dave Rovics, who's coming to town October 12th, Indigenous Peoples Day. You looking forward to this, Dave?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, I've heard a lot of your music, and there's a lot of historical references. In fact, one of my favorite is the Irish Brigade that leaves the U.S. Army and goes and fights with the Mexicans. And a lot of interesting reasons there. One, the issue, of course, of slavery, as there was no slavery in Mexico, but in the Confederacy there was, and the early people in Texas were bringing slavery to the region. And, of course, the ballad of Hugh Thompson, you know, the real hero of the Vietnam War, who, you know, was a very obscure figure, but getting a little historical attention. I mean, the man who stood down Lieutenant Calley's murderous troops. What kind of songs do you have on Indigenous people? Have you dealt with that issue as well?
Yeah. I mean, I've written in various forms about Indigenous people. And I mean, I spent a couple weeks on Big Mountain in Arizona about 10 years ago, and also spent a bit of time around the Minnehaha Free State in Minneapolis. So I guess those have been two campaigns that I've been, you know, somehow or another involved with that have been, you know, basically Indigenous run campaigns to a large extent, and especially in the case of Big Mountain. And you know, I've also been involved somewhat, you know, again, as you know, as a musician, so sort of in whatever way you want to say, but you know, with the anti-nuclear movement, which is very, very much an Indigenous movement as well, and you know, some areas more than others, obviously. So yeah, I have written about it. And in terms of songs, "Song for Big Mountain" is probably the one that's most relevant, and also the song for the Minnehaha Free State.
Well, the and Big Mountain again involved the forced removal of Native Americans, despite treaties and assurances, and of course the rebelization of Sacred Mountain by wasn't that Peabody Coal?
That's right. That's right. America's biggest coal mine, which is now shut down, but for many decades was using millions of gallons of water a day from a desert aquifer and destroying the livelihood and the lives of many tens of thousands of Navajo people who used to live in that area, and a couple hundred or fewer people that are still living there.
All right, we got a couple minutes left here. What is on your new CD? What kind of stuff are you planning
to do? The CD is called Troubadour, People's History and Song, and it's 18 songs from throughout history, you know, not at all attempting to be any kind of a survey or anything like that, but 18 different stories from different historical events from the 1780s to last spring.
David Rovics, come into Columbus to perform at Carabar on October 12th at 5 o'clock. Please join us for some awesome radical folk music.
Right, we've been billing you as the key folk singer since Phil Oakes left the state and Ohio State University.
Well, that's a fine comparison as far as I'm concerned. It's often made, and I hope it's appropriate.
All right, well, look forward to seeing you at 5 o'clock on October 12th. And you may be in town a little earlier. We'll let people know through the freepress.org.
Oh, yeah, I'll be in town for the march.
Okay, in the morning there. Good.
Yeah.
Look forward to seeing you. It's always well, and look forward to listening to your songs, because you always remind me of George Orwell. And again, Orwell said, "He who controls the present controls the past, and he who controls the past controls the future." And you're the guy who's out there regularly battling for a real history of how power is wielded in this nation.
That's right. It's a very important battle.
All right. This has been Fight Back with Bob Fetrakis, Harvey Wasserman, and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
Peace. All right. Thanks a lot, Dave.